Trib Live presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt Insider Chris Basketball and Recruiting Talk. Trib Total Media, see what's next. Now, here's your host, Chris Peek.
That's right, it is the Panther Lair show here on Trib Live Radio. Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com. It's Panther-Lair.com. It's a website. News on the internet, continuing the Panther Lair show here on Trib Live Radio, as we do every Thursday.
That's right.
Well, happy anniversary to me.
Ends today. And we're going to do our 2015 opponent preview series, continue that part of the schedule, looking ahead in the schedule to Virginia Tech. We talked about Iowa last week. This week we're going to have our old friend Jason Stamm from HokieHaven.com's future, kind of what he sees coming from Virginia Tech for this year and in the coming, you know, in the near future. And whether it's going to, we talked last week with the Iowa reporter, Tom Kakert from HawkeyeReport.com, about whether the end of the era is coming for Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. We're going to talk to Jason Stamm from
Software in America. Visit TurboTech.
Off locally. And we talk a lot about, start off locally. We're going to talk about, this is a Pitt show. So we're going to start off by talking about Pitt. And we talk a lot about, though, Pat Narduzzi and momentum. We talk about how it's building with fans. He's doing these on the prowl events where he's gone around to different cities. I think D.C., a couple hundred fans and alums come out and hear him speak and have a Q&A and take photos. He's got some events coming up later this month, one in the North Hills, one in the South Hills, where he's going to go out and speak to fans. And the reviews have been rave reviews every time. People have loved
better. Flowers, 30-second rave.
With players, too, you can see it. You can talk to the players. They really feel like things are going to be headed in a good direction. Now, that's the way they should feel with a brand new head coach and a new staff. They should have a positive feeling that all the things that didn't work in the past are going to work now, and it's all going to be turned around, and that's what the fans are buying into. That's what the players see. Gallagher's tenure as chancellor at Pitt, I guess you could debate whether his signature move is hiring Pat Narduzzi or firing Steve Peterson. Probably, what are your perspective on?
Thanks. So how much do I owe you?
Oh.
And he's building momentum. When you talk to people at Pitt, there's nothing but optimism about what Narduzzi has done so far and what they expect him to be able to do over the next few years, starting this fall with the 2015 season. But the momentum is really building in another area. Talk about some whippy old guys here, and you can, let's just leave it at the door. Debating about the Whipple and whether the talent level is up or whether it's down or whether just general population has decreased the amount of available football players in the area and by extension decreased.
Free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax.
Those 10 years, we've been having debates about the talent level in the Whipple and how much Pitt needs to focus on the Whipple for all 10 of those years and probably even before that. We all understand that you can't build a football team exclusively from the Whipple and win the ACC. You need to be able to branch out. You need to be able to attack footprint, as everyone says. We understand all that, but this much is true. You have to get most of the top local guys. They're right there for you. They're in your backyard, and there are talented players. There may not be as many of them, but I think the misconception is that this notion that the decline in
tax, this is QTUI, not
from the Whipple in the rivals 250, top 250 and oftentimes top 100 every year. What it is just, those are just random numbers. But you understand what I'm saying. The overall numbers are down, not the high end of the talent. There's still high-end talent in the Whipple. There's still top-end talent in the Whipple. And if you're Pitt, you need to go get them, or at least a lot of them, because they are here. And anybody, just about
roses with white lilies and a beautiful Christmas.
Who are local, and you need to keep them here for so many reasons. For so many reasons, you need it because it builds. I hate to say things like it builds your brand, but it does. When you have local guys playing for the hometown team and they're the stars, it somehow means even more than you have those out of state guys. It's sort of Connor from Erie or Tyler Palco or Darrell Rebus. I mean, it carries something extra. And so when those top guys are there, and they'll be there every year, you need to go get them. And right now, Pitt is shaping up to be in position to get a whole bunch of them in this 2016 recruiting.
At TurboTax.com, it's free to...
You're less than a year away from signing these guys. Pat Narduzzi and his staff obviously had some ground to make up. They were recruiting some of these guys at Michigan State or some of the other places they were at. But now they've been at Pitt since December or January, as opposed to other schools that have been recruiting these kids for 2 years or somewhere along there. The Pitt staff has made up a ton of ground. And we've talked about this in the past when they had the fight night for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, and they had all the recruits down to spend time around the coaches. We talked about how they've gone out of their way to get these recruits into the Southside facility.
2010.
For a
good position with almost all the top guys. And maybe I don't even need to say almost. They're in position with the top guys in the class of 2016. And I can look back over, you know, the top 10 Western Pennsylvania. I won't say Whitfield, but the top 10 Western Pennsylvania recruit. You look at the top 10 in Western PA and say, yeah, Pitt really never had a chance with that kid. You know, Pitt really, maybe was a little bit in the mix, but it's pretty clear that they weren't coming here for a long time. And I could go year by year and find guys in there. This top 10 for this year, I look at them all and say, Pitt's in the mix.
I ordered flowers for my wife.
Oh, right here, sir.
As I looked at it, I mean, Miles Sanders, a running back from Woodland Hills, we talked about him at length in the past. He's committed to Penn State. Very interested in Pitt. Very interested in this coaching staff. Damar Hamlin from Central Catholic, safety. Probably going to be Pitt or Ohio State, probably favoring Pitt at this point, or that's kind of what we're hearing. Khalik Hudson, 10 that we're kind of looking for, or maybe 9 out of 10. But he's still connected with a lot of these other recruits who are interested in Pitt.
Free.
They kind of convince him to take another look at Pitt, and he ends up looking closer. Kayzon Pugh from Aliquippa worked out at Pitt's camp on Sunday, even though he's got an offer from Pitt.
Today, trusted brand claim.
Receiver from Clareton. I think Pitt's probably the favorite to land him. Andrew Pritz from Hickory, he's probably the one that's the least likely to go to Pitt at this point. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of interest there. So I said that I could always find a guy who didn't really look like there was any around Pitt. Rashad Wheeler, a defensive tackle from Central Catholic, probably going to go to Pitt or Penn State. Brandon Ford, offensive lineman from Upper St. Clair, is already committed to Pitt. And then you've got a handful of other guys who could be in that mix as the number 10 recruit in Western PA. The Jackson twins, Tim and James from Alderdice, wide receivers, big, fat. Offers. I think Pitt's going to be in the driver's seat for them. Jeremiah Jones, he plays quarterback at Woodland Hills, probably will be a linebacker in college. He's committed to West Virginia. If Pitt actually starts pursuing him, I think there's a real chance of a flip. And that, so one of those guys is probably number 10.
This is the most trusted brand of tax software.
Almost all those guys, maybe with the exception of Pritz and possibly Hudson, they're all pretty high on Pitt. And Pitt's got a real shot at almost all of them. I mean, you could get a bunch of the top 10 prospects in the Western PA this year. And, I mean, you look how that stacks up, because if they did get a bunch, it's possible this year. That was Dave Wanstead's first full recruiting class. You know, he's recruiting it through the spring of 2005 and the summer of 2005 before he had actually coached a game. We always know that that's the caveat with that Wanstead era is, boy, the momentum was never higher than it was before he coached a game. Although post
9365, free is better.
Of the top 8 out of the top 10 Western PA recruits, the only guys he didn't get were Darren Walls and Anthony Leonard. But before that, 2005 class, that was the one that Wanstead kind of took over and finished after Walt Harris left. He got 5 out of the top 10. Before that, 2004, Walt Harris got 2 out of the top 10 Western PA recruits just to get to 2 in that class. Dave Wanstead had everybody buying in that year. He was new. We talked about it in the past, about the hype that was going on at that time and how exciting it was. He was bringing Pitt football back. He was going to take over Western PA again and build a fence around Western Pennsylvania and all that stuff. And
Crystal Vaz, an excellent choice.
Thanks.
Not a bad comparison right now. Now, Pat Narduzzi needs to get those commitments. Pat Narduzzi needs to land those recruits before we can fully make that comparison. But you can see some of the seeds being planted. A lot of hype. And there was a lot of momentum back then, and it translated to recruiting well in Western PA. And it seems that momentum building, you can see it translating a bit to recruiting well in Western Pennsylvania. Now, the reality is 2006, when Wanstead landed 8 out of the top 10 Western PA recruits, was a bit of an outlier in the last 13 years. They got 8 that year in 2006. They got 5 or fewer.
Prepare, free to print, and free to eat.
Now, that's not a perfect stat. I mean, you can look through some of the previous classes. I mean, 2014 class, Anthony Davis from Gateway signed with Temple. Well, Pitt didn't offer Anthony Davis from Gateway. It was 2013. Deshaun Coleman was in the top 10 in Western PA, in the Western PA recruiting. So does that necessarily count? But still, those are pretty low numbers. And in 8 out of the last 13 years, Pitt only got 3 or fewer of the top 10. One of those was in 2007, Dave Wannstedt's first or second full recruiting class, excuse me. That came right after the 2005 season. They had all that momentum.
Daly and their client Intuit TurboTax.
They all ran away. Now, not all of them exactly panned out. But, I mean, you're talking about Tony Clemens, Stefan Wesniewski, Nick Suke, Rob Gronkowski, who he ended up being pretty good, Steve Pascors, Andrew Devlin, and Derek Moy. I mean, only three out of the top 10 went to Pitt in that class. The momentum faded. 13-9 class. But since then, they've gotten 2, 1, 3, 4, 2, and 3 of the top 10 recruits in Western PA. That's not a good enough number. And again, we can debate the talent level in the WPIA, and we don't need to debate that right now. Because I think we can all agree that if there
I've got 2 dozen long-stemmed roses with
of them if you're Pitt. And never any less than 5. And the reality is Western PA has been open season for just about anyone. Penn State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, just to name a few, and then schools like Rutgers or Maryland will come in here, Boston College, Virginia. There's a couple of Virginia kids. It's because it's been open season, open hunting in Western PA. Pitt is the hometown school, but Pitt has to fight for the hometown recruits. Pitt has to fight for them, and they have to win, and they have to get momentum. They have to have momentum to get local kids excited about Pitt, or at least to get the ball rolling.
There's a federal return for free at Turbo.
Wonder, you know, in this sort of insulated world that I inhabit, where it's message boards on a Pitt site, you know, inhabited by Pitt fans, and, you know, Pitt Twitter, where most of the people I follow or interact with on Twitter are Pitt fans, they're, of course, excited about it. So I always wonder, you know, is the momentum really there? Is it really when you see the top 10 recruits in Western PA and say, boy, I could legitimately make a case for Pitt getting 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 of those guys. And not even really the phrase I seem to be using a lot over the last few months, without really stretching the limits of reason, I can make a case.
And based on Intuit Commission survey, August 2000.
Doozy is building. Well, here's another one. They might clean up in Western PA this year. Now, if they go out and you know what the bed in the fall, it's not going to matter because they're going to lose guys and they're not going to hold on to the recruits. Although Dave Wannstedt did, so I guess I shouldn't say that as an absolute. But they're creating them, win them over for some recruits that they're still pursuing. They believe that they will do that, but they know they have to lay the foundation right now, and that's what they've been doing. And the success, they only have one commitment from Western PA, but you can see how those seeds have been planted, and you can see the response, and you can see how the
Hi, I ordered flowers.
Spending time around the coaches. There's genuine interest, genuine excitement. And here's the last thing I'll say. These kids that we're talking about, these Western PA kids, they know, and this is the truth, and this is a fact, they know that if they all go to Pitt, they can make a title game and play in the college football playoff, not that kind of thing, but they know if they stick together and they all go to Pitt, what Narduzzi has done and accelerate it in terms of a turnaround and increasing momentum. It could be, to use one of their words, this is a word a recruit used with me.
Well, happy anniversary to me.
Free.
The opportunity is there. The coaches need to seize it by continuing to do what they're doing right now and then win in the fall. That's some real legitimate momentum. All right, coming up next, we're going to get back to our position-by-position preview for the 2015 season. We're looking at tight ends. Everybody loves the tight ends and just about everything else on the offense. There's one X factor, and we'll talk about that. And then after that, we'll preview Virginia Tech with our friend Jason Stamm from HokieHaven.com. Coming up next, talk tight ends and then the Hokies on the Panther Lair Show on Triple Live Radio. Talking a lot about WPIA recruiting there in that opening segment, but we're going to turn our focus.
Where in America? Visit TurboTax.com.
And we're talking about tight ends. And Pittsburgh, man, we love tight ends, don't we? I mean, you think about the Heath chance at Heinz Field, or you think about how Pitt fans have talked about whoever it was, whether it was Eric Gill or it was Nate Byam, now J.P. Holtz. We love tight ends who sometimes catch passes and then bowl guys over. I think J.P. Holtz engendered himself and made himself a fan favorite pretty much from the time he was at that game at Syracuse as a freshman. He caught a pass and he trucked Shamarco Thomas. If you were
Flowers, 30-second radio
played out, and J.P. Holtz gave him the Smoky from Friday, if you know what I mean. And but I think ever since then, And even before that, Pitt fans loved his style and his approach. They saw that. They love that. That's what we love in Pittsburgh is that big, tough. Ask the Steelers coaches, would you rather have Jimmy Graham or Heath Miller? They would say Jimmy Graham, obviously. But if you polled Steelers fans, I actually think you'd get something close to a if not an overwhelming majority, a solid majority that would say give us Heath. I think we love it here.
So how much do I owe you?
Oh, it's free.
As well. What we see with Pitt is just a constant refrain of why don't they throw to the tight ends more? They need to throw to the tight ends more. Why don't the tight ends get the ball more? 2009 was the best example of this. And I always cite this and I always laugh about it. You've got James Conner and Tyler Boyd right now, but you don't have like that number three. You don't have a guy like Doran Dickerson because there aren't many guys like Doran Dickerson, but you don't have that third explosive playmaker who could go all the way on just about any play. But even with that trio,
file, no wonder TurboTax is the
on that year at Heinz Field. That was the height of the anti-Bill Stahl booing because Pitt was down, and then Stahl ended up leading a fourth quarter comeback to beat UConn, and people stopped booing him after that. But Nate Bynum made a huge catch in that game to keep on the game-winning drive to keep it moving. Henry's a good pass catcher and he's a good runner. They got to get the ball to Henry. And I always said, well, okay, you could either give the ball to Deion Lewis, Jonathan Baldwin, and or Doran Dickerson, or you could throw it to Nate Bynum and Henry Heinoski. Three of those guys have a potential to score a touchdown every time they touch the ball. The other two probably aren't going to score unless they're in.
This is QTUI93.
Throw to the tight ends more. I've always said you got to get the ball to your playmakers. This is what I say. I always say I don't want to take a touch away from. We'll talk now. Current day. I don't want to take a touch away from James Conner or Tyler Boyd to give it to J.P. Holtz. Just kind of as a general rule of thumb, I think as he emerges, I think that can be Chris James. But right now, it's Conner and it's Boyd. And any touch that goes to somebody else is obviously going to be an opportunity that doesn't go to those guys. But I also realize that you can't just give the ball to two guys every time. Just like in 2000.
With white lilies in a beautiful crystal vase.
The second leading receiver on the team. Oh, that's only a little bit out of whack. Those numbers are only a little misleading since there were 188 completed passes for Pitt last season and 78 of them were caught by Tyler Boyd. That's 41.4%. Holtz was the number two receiver on the team, second leading receiver. He had in six pass attempts. You look at the stat book and it says 308. I think two of those were spikes. So 306 pass attempts. Tyler Boyd was targeted on 127 of them. That's 41.5% of the pass attempts. Manessa Garner was second on the team with 35 targets.
Tax.com. It's free to prepare.
7 targets. That's 8.8% of the passes. The numbers are just wildly skewed. Wildly. I mean, you just look at that. 41% of the passes thrown, 41% of the passes caught were Tyler Boyd. So everybody else is splitting a little less than 60% of the passes and reception. Some others over there for everybody else catching passes. I mean, everything was thrown to Tyler Boyd, and the rest of the wide receivers and tight ends had to kind of make do with just whatever they got. And that's okay. Boyd should be far and away the leader in receptions and targets. He's a go-to guy. He's a big play wide receiver who should be the one you turn to.
10.
For daily and
spin. That you can open up your offense more if you pick your spots with the quote-unquote lesser receiving targets like tight ends. Third downs, I think, are a classic example that Pitt fans point to, and rightfully so. Pitt threw 94 passes on third down last season. 94 total combined to see 9 targets on those on third down. 9 out of 94 went to the tight ends, Holtz and Orndorff. Now, I'm not saying every pass has to go to tight ends, or even a majority of the third down passes need to go to tight ends. But Boyd was targeted 29 times on third down. He caught just
for my wife.
Oh, right here, sir. I've got
7 out of 9. Now that's a small sample size. I don't deny that. But still, everybody knew the passes were going to Boyd. Maybe a bit more variety could open that up. You know, I talked about when we talked about Tyler Boyd, or when we talked about wide receivers last week, talked about Boyd and all of his numbers and all of that. I think some other threats could actually increase the impact that Boyd has by drawing attention away from him and potentially giving him an opportunity to make bigger catches in bigger situations if you you know, you could his stats might come down, but his impact might actually increase.
He is better. Do your simple federal.
Actually, use your tight ends. You pick your spots with them and take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves with your tight ends. You could, even if Tyler Boyd has fewer stats, has lower stats, end up increasing his impact because you're drawing the attention away a little bit. And that includes spreading the ball to the tight ends. And that's a big part of it, is spreading the ball, is Chad Vojtic's development. When we talk about it, we talked about it last week with the wide receivers. We obviously talked about it a few weeks ago when we broke down the quarterbacks. As Vojtic gets more comfortable in the
off.com today, trusted brand claim based on
got better as the season went on and got more comfortable and did a better job of spreading the ball. But Boyd's target percentage actually went up as the season went on. He was targeted on a greater percentage of passes as the season progressed. Like the first six games, he was targeted on 38.4% of the passes. In the last seven games, bowl game against Houston, where Boyd was targeted like 18 times. And also, Manessa Garner's injury spurred that. You know, Vojtic actually threw to Garner on almost 20% of his passes in the first six games. With no Manessa Garner, it resulted in more targets for the tight ends, plus six games or so. But injuries aside, I think an older, more mature, and comfortable Chad Vojtic should mean more passes for the tight ends. I mean, he should be getting more comfortable out there where he can see the field, see who's open, and take advantage of those opportunities so that the next time the defense has to account for more things with your tight ends or your other receivers, and then taking advantage of the opportunities for Boyd when they present themselves. And probably just the first part of that sentence is what really counts, is taking advantage of the opportunities that present themselves. If you drop back and Tyler Boyd is getting all the attention, then you've got J.P. Holtz or Scott Orndorff, or you've got...
Free?
That's right.
Well,
Boyd, and as you take advantage of those opportunities, the defense has to adjust to that and account for those things, which will then should take some of the attention away from Boyd and give you more opportunities there. It all goes hand in hand, and the tight ends are part of that. And like I said, you have to pick your spots. You know, we talked about third down. The red zone is another spot. Scott Orndorff should be a red zone weapon. He really should. Brian O'Neill, too, the redshirt freshman. Keep an eye on him this year, number 84.
Most trusted brand of tax software in America.
Red zone. Last year, Scott Orndorff had one pass thrown to him in the red zone. One. Tyler Boyd, Dontez Ford, Rashid Ibrahim, J.P. Holtz, Manessa Garner, Isaac Bennett, and Kevin Weatherspoon each had more passes thrown to them in the red zone. Adonis Jennings had the same number of passes thrown to him passes in the red zone last year. And when you've got a...
Free is better.
Flat. Like I said, they've got two red zone weapons at tight end. Plus Holtz, if you want to throw him in too. But Orndorff and O'Neill, I mean, Orndorff's like 6'5". O'Neill is probably some linebackers. And they're bigger than safeties. They're a tough matchup, particularly when you get in close to the end zone. And to only throw one pass to Orndorff last year, it doesn't make any sense.
Choice.
Thanks. So
if they had taken advantage of having a guy like Scott Orndorff a little more. And J.P. Holtz, too. I mean, Holtz can make plays in the red zone, but I just think the physical skills that Orndorff and O'Neill have should make them weapons once you get inside the 20. It seems like this staff sees the matchups it can create at Tyler's opportunities, too. They knew what J.P. Holtz could do and what Orndorff could do. Paul Christ and Joe Rudolph never sat down with Chad Vojtic and said, listen, don't throw to the tight end.
Free to print and free to e-file.
In the field well or feeling comfortable or being comfortable enough to distribute the ball well. That's really what it comes down to. We asked every week, we asked Paul Christ, oh, what about the tight ends? What about the tight ends? And people talked about it. And I'll give credit to J.P. Holtz. I mean, he was diplomatic about it all the time. He said, look, if Chad wants to throw to me, I'm ready to catch it. And Vojtic would say, I know JP's out there. I know I've got good weapons in him and Scott. I got to get the ball to him, et cetera, et cetera. It just didn't happen. And so it comes back.
And their client Intuit TurboTax. This is
these guys can be weapons and third down and red zone. We can talk about all of that, but it doesn't mean a damn thing if Chad Vojtic doesn't see them. If Chad Vojtic's not comfortable back there, if he's not scanning the field and seeing the opportunities that he's got with 86 and 83. Which I think is a large part of the reason that he locked into Tyler. He wasn't comfortable. This is my theory is that he wasn't comfortable enough seeing the field. And so he found 23 and went there, even when it wasn't a good idea. But if Vojtěch can do that, if he can develop it, if he can evolve a little bit and get more comfortable and see the
two dozen long stem roses with white
lot this spring, specifically guys like O'Neill and Orndorff, actually those two guys in particular, where Holtz was staying more in line as kind of a traditional, and Orndorff and O'Neill, who were making plays and taking advantage of matchups, you get a nickel corner on you, and we saw this with I can remember years ago, Pitt playing against Notre Dame, and putting guys like Tyler Eifert in the slot, and getting Kaywan Williams covering him, and Kaywan, to his credit, did well.
Returned for free at TurboTax.
I can remember Kaywan Williams coming in as a nickelback as a freshman and getting the assignment there against one of Notre Dame's really good tight ends who was lining up in the slot. And Kaywan did well, but if you can get that matchup, you've got some opportunities. And especially with guys like Orndorff and O'Neill. They can take advantage of that if you can get the ball to them. This is a good group. Those guys are. I think those guys, particularly Edwards, will see his opportunities increase next year when Holtz is gone. But I think Holtz, Orndorff, O'Neill are...
Hi, I ordered flowers for my wife.
For every snap as an inline tight end, and then the other two working out of the slot and going out and catching passes and potentially opening up the passing game. I really think if the tight ends are used and they can have a good season. And if that happens, I think they can really help open things up for the rest of the passing game. And you know, barring a huge season this year, we're going to come out of J.P. Holtz's career. He's a senior this season. We're going to say, boy, he could have done a whole lot more in his career. And it's not any fault of his. He overlapped for 3 years with Tyler Boyd. He caught 44 passes the last 2 years. And he's better than a 22-catch season tight end. He is.
Happy anniversary to me.
Free is
better. 4 catches over the last 2 years. As I said, part of that is overlapping for 3 years with Tyler Boyd. Counting this season. And then his freshman year, 2012, he overlapped with Devin Street, and he had Tino Sinceri, and I think he had to stay in and block a lot because that offensive line was really struggling. But J.P. Holtz has been a great player for Pitt. He's been a great person for Pitt. Love the guy's attitude. Love the way he approaches things. He's just a hard-working tight end. He's a Pittsburgh-style tight end, which we love so dearly here in this city. And I think Pitt fans love it too.
America. Visit TurboTax.com.
Tight end preview next week. We will turn our focus to the offensive line. Keep things rolling through our position preview. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Jason Stamm, our old friend from HokieHaven.com. That's the Rivals.com Virginia Tech site. He's going to preview Virginia Tech for us, 2015. Is Frank Beamer's time coming to an end? Is that era to expect out of Virginia Tech? That's Jason Stamm from Hokie Haven. Coming up next on the Panther Lair Show here on Dribble Live Radio.
The original nationally famous Clark Bar and Grill. Free parking and free appetizer with lunch or dinner on non-game days. Limited time offer. Located on the North Shore.
Hours, 30-second radio.
The Clark Bar and Grill is the ideal setting for lunch, dinner, happy hour, or just watching your favorite sports event. Our restaurant has remained a constant tradition for over 20 years in the ever-evolving city of Pittsburgh, and we're nationally famous for our handcrafted burgers. Whether you're a sports enthusiast, casual selection, the original, nationally famous Clark Bar and Grill since 1989.
Now back to Chris Peek on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Panther Lair Show here on Trib Live Radio. Chris Peek, publisher of PantherLair.com. It's a Pitt site on the rival.
How much do I owe you?
Oh, it's free.
Haven.com, our old friend Jason Stamm. Jason, how are you today?
I'm great, Chris.
That's good.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, glad to get you on. We're kind of working our way through the schedule. And last week we actually talked to, I think, our mutual friend Tom Kaker from HawkeyeReport.com, covers Iowa out there. And he and I were talking about how these guys who are sort of institutions in college football, they've been at their school for so long, and there's only two guys I could really think of right now, and it's Ferentz and it's Frank Beamer. And Tom was telling us, you know, Kirk Ferentz is kind of he might need to do some things this year to keep himself in Iowa for another year or two.
No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted.
Ferentz is one of those guys, like, you definitely don't realize how long he's been in Iowa. Like, it really doesn't seem like it's been
17 years.
It's been like it's been.
I mean, yeah, like 17 years
weird,
is crazy.
But, yeah, and honestly, he's not really far ahead of him, but Frank Beamer has been at Virginia Tech. This will be his 29th season in Blacksburg, so some success, obviously, but also having a fan base and administration that's been pretty comfortable with where they are and what they're doing. Of course, you said Ferentz has kind of had the heat put on him. Beamer has also had the heat put on him. I mean, these past 3 years, Chris. I mean, you at least followed, know what Virginia Tech has done. They had so much.
QTUI 936.
Seventh win came in the bowl game. So they were looking at, breaking that long, long streak of winning seasons. But, Frank, I think, has kind of earned the right, or at least he's been given the right by the administration. Of course, it's a new administration, a new athletic director the last couple of years, and went Babcock. But I think even Babcock has pretty much let the game everybody's talking about down here outside of Ohio State this year is the Bristol game in 2016. That's when they play Tennessee at Bristol Motor Speedway down in Bristol, Tennessee, and it's going to pretty much shatter every kind of college football attendance record. I mean, they're expecting
Lilies in a beautiful crystal vase
and dynamics with the seating for and changing things for a football game. But I think that's the game he's kind of looking at coaching. I think it's pretty realistic. You never know how things go, but I think being realistic, they're probably not going to win a national championship there in Frank Beamer's era here in the next couple of years. So I think that's kind of the game he's looking for. The only thing I can really see, maybe, unless they completely tank this year, which I don't think they will, that or his health has been such a big concern. He had throat surgery just after the UVA game, which is, before the bowl game, which seemed kind of strange. Usually you do something like that when the season is completely.
.com. It's free to prepare, free to.
You can just tell by watching him, listening to him. He's not as healthy as a lot of people were letting on. So that's kind of the only thing I think is going to be would maybe interfere. But, if all goes well, he'll be coaching at least, I would say, two more years.
It's good to see a guy have that option, although you always have to ask Iowa State. And I think that's one of those sort of unforgivable things, and it should be, that's kind of hurting Ferentz. But turning our attention to this specific team then, 2015 Virginia Tech, we'll start with the quarterback position. Is Michael Brewer's job to lose? Is Dwayne Lawson going to be a factor here? How do you kind of see it playing out?
For Daly and their client.
Rival camp was that he thought Dwayne Lawson was legit. He thinks he's pretty much the truth. So. And I agree. I've heard nothing, seen nothing that kind of says otherwise. But I do think Michael Brewer he'll be a senior. I guess maybe technically a fifth-year senior. This will only be a second year at Virginia Tech. He transferred really pretty night and day in a lot of ways from last year. But the thing that a lot of people seem to kind of forget or maybe not even fail to realize is that Brewer arrived in the summer. So he missed all of last spring. And that's a big deal when you're transitioning schools, transitioning offenses. It's a little different from the
right here, sir. I've got two
dozen period, and that's one reason why he struggled. The offensive line didn't help him much last year, but I think Lawson will probably end up being at least a 3-year starter system. He knows everything around him, all his weapons, running backs, receivers. He really has a full grasp, it seems like, now after being in here for over a year now. So I do think it's Brewer's to lose unless he falls flat on his face. I just can't see him not being a starter when it comes to season open.
Better. Do your simple federal return.
I mean, the combination of that and Brewer falling flat on his face, I think it's Brewer's, definitely this season.
Looking elsewhere in the backfield, just kind of reading, doesn't seem to be coming back from an injury or anything, but is Marshawn Williams expected to be available this year? Is Trey Edmonds going to be healthy? Of course, Shy McKenzie's the local guy. Seems like some talent. I like a lot of those players in the backfield there at Virginia Tech, but some question marks.
Yeah, there definitely are.
Today,
namely offensive line, I think probably got the most question marks. But, J.C. Coleman is one of those guys that, he'll be a senior this year. And, his other 3 years, shown flashes. And then that's pretty much all he's been, just kind of flashy to do that. But he kind of started to sustain it a little bit last year. He, for his first couple years, he was really kind of jumpy and got hesitant to hit the hole a lot of times. So I think he's really gotten a lot more comfortable. He knows where to hit the hole and when to hit the hole, which season with all those injuries that you mentioned. I think Marshawn Williams, he's expected to come back. He and Shy McKenzie both had torn ACLs, so they're expected to come back this fall. Trey Edmonds also had Marshawn and Shy both sat out all spring. They didn't see any time. So coming back from those injuries should be good. They've also got another running back, Sean McLeese, 4-star kid from Oscar Smith over in Chesapeake, Virginia. Over in Tidewater area. He's coming in as a true freshman. I think he'll probably maybe see at least a little bit of time.
Free?
That's right.
Well, happy
anniversary. Not settled yet. He still has not been fully reinstated to the team. Virginia Tech University has said they're not going to punish him further, but he's still waiting his court date. And it's been very, very hush-hush, kind of strange, really, that no date has really just been no mention of it since then. So it's got to happen eventually. It's going to happen sometime. But until it does, he has not been reinstated at Virginia Tech. They seem to be confident that he's going to be back, but for right now, he's not back. So J.C. Coleman's a guy, and sprinkled in, hopefully, Marshall Williams and Trey Edmonds.
And then I was curious about the wide receivers.
The brand of tax software in America.
Quarterback turned wide receiver or tight end or whatever he's doing. Will he be a pretty primary threat in the receiving game?
I think he definitely will. I mean, Bucky is, yeah, he was a four-star quarterback and, you know, for whatever reason just, you know, didn't have what a lot of people thought he had coming in. He was really, really struggled and was converted to a tight end for his redshirt freshman season. I think, you know, the way he's going right now, he's looking like a surefire NFL draft pick. I would say probably right now second or third round here. Not next year, probably year after that. But, yeah, as far as the receiver.
Five, free is better. Flowers.
Again, showed some stuff, but just can't be consistent. So, you know, Kevin Asante, Dimitri Knowles, Deion Newsome, Jalen Bradshaw, kind of a few guys that should figure in. But they've got to have at least one of those guys step up and the better receivers in the ACC. But behind them, there's not a lot. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of Bucky Hodges, especially anywhere near the red zone. You're going to see a lot of Bucky Hodges and a lot of Ryan Malik as well at tight end.
So, if, you know, a bunch of guys, like we talked about, a bunch of guys at running back and.
Excellent choice.
Thanks. So, how much.
That on HokieHaven.com in the spring football reviews that the O-line's a pretty big concern. Is that just the biggest concern on offense, or is that maybe the biggest concern on the team at this point?
I'd say it's a combination between that and the depth of wide receiver as far as on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Shown that he's going to be the starter at center and looks really solid. But behind him, they had issues even just snapping the ball this spring. Lots of fumbles, lots of, just botched snaps, botched quarterback exchanges. So, they
print and
some of the issues, Brewer was under center a lot just to try to lessen some of those mistakes, and they were very, very prevalent at times. I think it'll help some. They had a few injuries there. Kyle Chung will probably – Colt Pettit really struggled a lot. Tyrell Smith really struggled a lot. Both those guys are kind of the key guys who did struggle at center, but you need somebody there because it's tough to go a full season.
Tax, this is cute.
Tag Teller and Augie Connie, probably two of the stronger guards in the league. Tackles are just okay. You know, Jonathan McLaughlin coming back. Wade Hansen had been a walk-on, was offered a scholarship at the end of spring. So, you know, those positions are okay. Guards are good, but center is a big, big concern.
Jason, where are the strengths? Is it the secondary just like it always is? Is it up front? Where do the Hokies look like they're going to be pretty strong on defense? And should this be another, stout Virginia Tech defense?
Well, I think the up front on the line and in the secondary, that's going to be their strong point.
Dozen long stemmed roses with white lilies in there.
Daddy Nick was pretty much the only one of the starting four who played all spring. The rest of them sat out. Luther Maddie coming back from injury. Those three should be all back. They should be 100% healthy. I mean, they weren't major injuries, but there was no reason to play them during the spring and risk further injury. But Daddy Nicholas, if you look at a lot of NFL draft, it's a year away from next year's draft, but he's
earned for free at TurboTax.com.
I think he's probably going to be even higher than his brother Kyle Fuller, who went, I believe it was 14th to the Bears in last year's NFL draft in 2014. So definitely a very, very strong secondary coming back from injury. Actually, he's had a couple of injuries. It wasn't really just one. I mean, he had a few things he was returning back from, and still not 100% if he's going to be 100% when fall camp rolls around. So that could be a little bit of a concern. But as far as safety, I think they're pretty solid. The linebackers are good.
Mission survey, August 2010.
At one of the linebacker spots, so that's one to watch. Andrew Matuapuaka, not really consistent enough to say he's locked a spot down, so that's where you may see Carson Lydon. So.
All right, last one for Jason Stamm here from HokieHaven.com. Before we let you run, expectations for this season, Jason. I mean, we talked to him on the hot seat or a record that would put him on the hot seat, but what's realistic for this team? What do the fans kind of expect? What do you think the team expects to do this year?
I don't know if anybody past the true Virginia Tech diehard.
Hi, I ordered flowers for my wife.
Oh. You know, you got to think that Urban Meyer is just licking his chops in that game. I mean, that was his one blemish from all last season. I'm sure he's had this one circled for quite a while. But, you know, outside of that game, I think the rest of the schedule is very, very winnable. I mean, they're going to have a couple more road games in the last year. You know, they'll go to Purdue. But I think they can win at least 8, maybe 9, probably realistically. I don't know if I'd go higher than that. They do have question marks again, so that would be the reason to kind of, you know, maybe not with full confidence say.
Anniversary to me.
Free is better.
And figure some more things out.
Jason, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate you joining us as always. We'll talk to you again this fall when that Virginia Tech game comes up, and then we'll see you down in Blacksburg in September.
Sounds good. See you then. See you in Baltimore.
All right. Thanks a lot. That's Jason Stamm from Hokie Haven Docking Wire References, because that's what we do. We are all wrapped up, all out of time here. Time just flies by when you're having fun. Good talk today about the Whippeel, about the tight ends. Great to have Jason Stamm on to break down Virginia Tech for us.
Tax.com today.
It was supposed to have no chance, and they ended up kind of running away from Virginia Tech these last couple of years, though. 2013, real tight game in Blacksburg that Pitt lost. And then 2014, a pretty close game up here in Pittsburgh. Panthers won. So they'll go down to Blacksburg in late September and see what they can do. All right, of course. And talking a little offensive line and breaking down the Virginia Cavaliers as we continue our opponent preview series. That's all next week. Thanks again. We'll
30-second radio.